In the 1970s, a future, top-notch podcasting team was born, and then raised on military bases because their dads were in the Air Force. These Gen Xers eventually grew up and were unleashed upon the world. Today, looking forward to retirement, they survive by dishing out their opinions. If you have questions that need answers and an open mind, if you can spare 60 minutes a week, and if you have internet access, maybe you can listen to Kenyetta and Jack Save the World.
How do you think I'm going to get along without you when you're gone? You took me for everything that I had, kicked me out of my own. Are you happy? Are you satisfied? How long can you stand the heat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip to the sound of the beat. Look out. Doom, doom, doom. Another one bites the dust. Listening friends, that fella in the song may have, but we will not. We are here. We are raring to go. We're back to save the world. And in case you didn't recognize it from my bad lyricism, no one ever accused me of being a singer or anything remotely like it. Those lyrics were from the 1980 hit, Another One Bites the Dust, by the iconic group Queen. Voila.
Yes.
Hi, Jack.
Hi. Freddie Mercury. Rest his soul. That dude was definitely blessed with some pipes. That man could sing.
Rest his blessed soul. Amen. And listening friends, if you haven't figured out, yes, we're still in the middle of March. Yes, we're still all musical, and you're going to get this musical March the way we give it to you. So strap in. First up, WTFs.
Good old WTFs. This has just been a week of unending blessings in that department.
Do tell.
So let's just dive in. Isn't it my turn to start?
I believe so.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about alumnus of the program, Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida. And the headline from the New Republic is, Matt Gaetz will have to testify whether he is a massive creep. He just got served a subpoena. And if you've paid any type of attention to the man's career, he has been investigated before for sex trafficking, i.e. going on vacation to a state that wasn't Florida with someone under 17. And it was really weird. He ended up not being charged with it, but the guy that did it with him did get charged and I believe served some jail time because he did a plea agreement. And on this one, I'm not sure if it's the same one, but once again, it was another minor. And I really wish the party of family values would, you know, stop, what's that word I'm looking for? Molesting children.
You remember that movie, A Few Good Men?
I do.
Well, no, I'll take it back. That's not the one I'm thinking of. It is also another military-related movie, but I got it mixed up. Okay, it's actually Full Metal Jacket I'm thinking of.
Yes.
The scene where, or was it, is it Private Pyle, was that his name?
Yeah.
He kept goofing up, and Drill Sergeant was like, yeah, he's making it worse for all y'all. So, of course, all the rest of the squad turns against poor Private Pyle. And while he's asleep in bed in one night, they strap him down and proceed to beat dog shit out of him with bars of soap and socks to get him straight so he wouldn't keep getting them in trouble. I think this is an appropriate solution to this Gaetz problem. Push him in a closet somewhere in the Capitol building, get you that good Dial soap, some white terry socks, everybody just come take a turn and leave him crying on the floor.
Yeah, the problem is I don't think with with the Republican Party there would be they would all have to get in line for that. It'd be like in the movie Airplane, you know, where they were all lined up and slapping her. Like the one would recover and then he would go get in line so he could get the next guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They were lying at a baseball bat and guitar and brass
But
knuckles. Get a hold of yourself.
yeah, just call me crazy though. I just feel like that maybe if you're a congressperson, maybe you shouldn't be having sex with minors. But
I mean, it's really anybody?
call me. Well, I mean, obviously,
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes.
I just feel like that should be like just an extra step of, but I guess nothing surprises me anymore. But yeah, he'll be going into a deposition on April 5th, where he will be asked a lot of questions about his alleged sexual activity. I wonder if somebody, you know what someone should do? They should go and get the transcripts of when Hunter Biden was being questioned. And any sex question that Hunter Biden was asked, they should ask Representative Gates those same questions. And you know what else they could do? Maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene could make some poster boards of Matt Gates.
You heard she got fined, right?
Oh, for the
The
all the
hat.
masks. Yeah, they finally, yeah, that finally went through because it's a good chunk of change on that. Maybe she could ask Donald for a loan.
We call that FA. F.O.
Yeah, that's that is our generation's motto.
I'm so sick of her. Anyway.
I am too. But before we move on, it just sort of reminds me because this Matt Gaetz situation of a certain fella who's huge on the in the MAGA crowd. He's a huge supporter of Donald Trump, and that would be a fella known who goes by Uncle Ted, but also known as Ted Nugent. And he likes to, call Democrats groomers and everything, which is funny because in 1978, when he was 30 years old, he had a relationship with a 17-year-old girl. He also wrote a song called Jailbait. And in the 1988 episode of the VH1 program Behind the Music, from his very own mouth, he verified the claim. He said that he had an addiction to girls and he had started this relationship with a 17-year-old named Pele Massa. And then here's where things get iffy. He says that he got the stamp of approval from her parents. A lot of people say that he gave them a certain amount of money, but this can't be verified, that they signed over legal guardianship to him so that he could take her on tour with him. And he couldn't be charged with sex trafficking a minor over state lines. Because while it was legal in Hawaii at the time for someone 30 years old to have sex with a 17-year-old, obviously a lot of the states that he was going to be touring in, that was not the case. I'm not entirely sure that getting the seal of approval from parents make it legal. But there you go. One of the things he stated was Nugent. She was like a dream, a fantasy, exotic dream of mine to meet her. And then Massa, they even interviewed her. I was underage. Even back in the wild 70s, it wasn't really terribly appropriate situation in most people's eyes. And now it would be criminal.
It was
So,
always criminal.
well, yes. Yeah, so the only thing I can think of is maybe one of the reasons Nugent is such a huge, strong supporter of Trump is because they both have a thing for, as Trump said about one Mr. Jeffrey Epstein, like me, he likes him young. And apparently, Mr. Ted Nugent falls in that as well.
It's like that Matthew McConaughey character in Dazed and Confused.
Right. Or Booger in Revenge of the Nerds when they're trying to have dates for the party, and he's all, I've been scoping the high schools.
Get older, but they all stay the same age.
Yep.
Imagine that. Oh my God, I'm so disgusted. All right.
But
All
anyway, that's
right.
Representative Matt Gaetz, who's currently voting on laws that only affect our lives.
I'm comforted, truly.
I
And
mean,
again, this just
it's the party of family values, the party that likes to start families with people that still live in the homes of their families because they're not old enough to live on their own yet.
and to think that there's so few, there's no, well, not few, there's not enough people to understand that if you sit out voting this year, or you throw your vote to a mystical third party. The worst and best thing you'll do, because it's all the same thing, is that no candidate will get to 270 electoral votes. And then the decision as to who wins goes to the House, which Matt Gaetz is a part of. Good luck.
Yep.
I'm comforted.
I'm sure you have never been more comforted in your life.
I'm so comforted, in fact, that I know deep down in the ball of my soul that America is a hellscape.
It is.
You know I was going to get that in there, right?
I know. It really is. It's a
it
hellscape.
It is.
What are we going to do about it?
Although I can say with an equal amount of certainty, I am not the craziest bitch in the Target party line. Moving on.
She won that award. Anyway, what's your WTF?
Mine's a little different. Today, yesterday, March 13th, marked 4 years since Breonna Taylor of Louisville, Kentucky, was murdered in her home as she slept by, quote, law enforcement officials serving a no-knock warrant for a guy who hadn't lived there nor had been associated with her in quite some time. That's the short version. And so.
Yeah, that was like the cliff note of the cliff note version.
And before I go further, I would like to give a shout out to, quote, Officer Brett Hankinson. This is the Jack Wad who was shot and then attempted to try to sue Breonna's boyfriend because he had a gun that he was legally registered for. And when someone breaks in your house and doesn't say who they are, you have every right to shoot back. So I hope Hankerson is having the life he deserves. In relation to this, again, something different than I've ever done. It just so happens I checked out a book recently, an anthology of horror stories called Tiny Nightmares. And when I say they're tiny short stories, they are tiny short stories. One of those tiny short stories really was a horror story. And I'm going to read it and you'll figure out why. So bear with me. Here we go. The story is called Jane Death Theory number 13 by Ryan Almacar Scott. It's possible, Officer Samuel Duncan mused while standing by his squad car with two of his colleagues late one night on the side of an empty road. It's possible for someone to shoot herself while locked in a squad car with metal restraints binding her hands behind her back. His partner, Ron Marsh, became quiet, gazed sadly at the bloody mass in the back seat, and after a moment of thinking replied, yes. Let's say she secrets the weapon in the small of her back so it's invisible during a search, and since her hands are back there, she reaches for it. If she jerks her head to the left or the right, she could conceivably angle the gun towards her temple. Sure, Officer Duncan said, sure. I can see how that, while not probable, could make a kind of sense in the absence of another explanation. Trooper First Class Stephen Hammonds stood with his arms folded, frowning sternly, a shadow cast from the large brim of his trooper hat darkening his face, almost to the shade of their once belligerent prisoner, Ron Marsh joked earlier. Trooper Hammonds had refused to crack even the hint of a smile. Now he chimed in. And with her dead, she's not able to provide any sort of counter-narrative. Officer Duncan nodded. Yeah, that sounds possible, doesn't it? Officer Marsh snorted, smoothed his mustache. Who would believe the alternative, he said. It's almost too horrible to conceive, isn't it? Go ahead.
All I could think of is that's as believable as Mr. Stephen Avery, whose trailer was a hoarder's house, being able to pretty much drain somebody of all of the blood in their body, clean up all of the blood while keeping the house looking like a hoarder's house with all of the dust in place. I'm pretty sure those two things were thought up by the same guy.
Probably. And it must be a playbook because each one of the three officers mentioned in this very short story are real life police officers. And all three of them were involved in incidents just like the one that is described in the story. Samuel Duncan, on November 19, 2013, in Durham, North Carolina, he arrested 17-year-old Jesus Huerta on a trespassing warrant. He searched him, handcuffed him with his hands behind his back, and put him in the back of a cruiser. Before they can make it back to the police station, Huerta died from a gunshot wound to the face. Cameras in the unit were shut off, and his death was ruled a suicide. Officer Ron Marsh in Little Rock, Arkansas, on July 28, 2012, arrested 21-year-old Chavis Carter. He frisked him, turning up marijuana, no gun, put him in the back of the car. Carter suffered a fatal gunshot wound to the head while handcuffed in the back seat of the cruiser. Authorities ruled Carver's death a suicide. And in August 2012, state police in New Iberia, Louisiana, searched 22-year-old Victor White III after taking him into custody, finding only drugs, put him in the back of the car, handcuffed behind his back. While in the car, he was shot. He died later from the wound. And according to a Louisiana State Police spokesman, Trooper First Class Stephen Hammonds, the handcuffed White shot himself in the back with a gun he hid from police during not just one search, but two. Authorities ruled his death, even though he was shot in the chest.
I mean, these people have a creativity that makes George Lucas look like an uncreative person.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, listening friends, and everyone in between, this is your law enforcement heart at work. And unfortunately, it resonates to something very recently in the so-called initial ruling of the death of Nex Benedict in Oklahoma by saying they committed suicide and that's a bunch of shit. We will pay attention to this as it develops because that is a garbage take and I'm sick of them.
Well, I obviously read that today, being in living in Oklahoma, and I thought, okay, likely story. But even if that is the case, so being ruthlessly bullied and having the shit beat out of you isn't something that could perhaps lead to committing suicide. You know what I mean?
I didn't even think that because what was in their system was what, Benadryl and Prozac? I think, and this is I'm supposing, and of course, the story's developing. I'm sure we're going to hear something else soon enough, but I think it was just a way for them to calm down and be able to try to sleep because they
They
just had
just
a
had the
hell of a
shit beat
day.
out of them.
Thank you. They just had a hell of a day. And all they wanted to do was relax, just get it out of their mind. Can you imagine?
Right. And I obviously, the closest I am to being a doctor is going to the doctors and watching the ER every season of it.
Correct.
So I feel I'm pretty qualified. But is it really that far of a stretch to think that a medication that affects the brain, i.e. Prozac, that if you maybe have an unnoticed brain injury from getting your head stomped into the floor, that perhaps maybe that might not be a good time to take a medication that affects your brain because it could have an adverse effect?
Gosh, I concur with that supposition, being as how I am also a qualified medical expert, having watched also every season of ER, as well as the sitcom ER, which also starred George Clooney and Scrubs. So I concur.
Yeah, I even one time watched an episode of Grey's Anatomy.
I'm watching it right now. So
And
I'm moving up. I'm getting in my specialty now.
I also watched Chicago Hope,
Yes, you did. And
which
Saving
started the
Spike.
same season as ER did, but it only lasted for like three, not like the 14 ER did. But
Also, Saint Elsewhere. So yeah, we have all these qualifications. We know better.
oh, and MASH. I can't forget
And
MASH.
of course, MASH. So Tongue in
But
cheek, listening friends, tongue in cheek, because if we couldn't do this, we'd run screaming off the planet. And there it is.
yep.
There's your dose of sunshine and rainbows. Lord forgive me. Because America
Yes.
is a hellscape. Okay. We're gonna readjust.
And we're going to go into something that's a little more lighthearted because it's musical March. See, we could have been predictable and gone with something basketball related in the month of March. But we were like, no, there are those that don't like basketball and those that prefer music, and we're going to cater to them.
Because we hate both basketball and music. So,
right.
Third attempt to show you how much we hate it. Yay.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, gee.
So, yeah, anyway, first of all, I had a couple people tell me that they really loved the Purple Rain episode that you did last week.
Is that so?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a couple people send me a message and said that they really enjoyed listening to that. And there were some people that learned a few things that they didn't know about Purple Rain. So I wanted to pass that along to you and our listeners.
Thank you, listening friends. Thank you. We had, as every episode, we had a pleasure doing it. So speaking of folk, I told you I've been trolling trolls over there on Threads. So I had a guy, based off a comment I made, had a guy inbox me. You know, I get worried about these things. And he said something to the effect about he agreed with the comment that I posted. And in my profile, of course, I mentioned the best potpourri grassroots podcast there is right now on the planet. And he said, hey, I'm about to take a listen to your podcast. What episode should I start with? I was like, I said, I recommend Separate and Not Equal, our look at the Black codes and Jim Crow laws that were used for 100 years in the United States. So, whether he did or not, I don't know. But he thought enough to ask, so I was thrilled. I have to mention it.
Yeah, yeah. That is good that's happening. And then sort of I was a guest on the Kane Stevens Super Show podcast where we discussed music. And today, actually, it went live and we talked about Pink Floyd because he's also a super fan. And so we prattled on for a little over an hour talking about that, and that was cool. And Kane is going to be a guest on our show in the near future, and we're going to be Kenyatta and I are both going to be a guest on his shows also in the near future.
Yes.
So keep your eyes and ears out for that. We'll let you know.
Yes.
But
all right.
Moving on with our show, talking about music. We are doing something that is, we're comparing the originals and their remakes. We're calling it originals and remakes. Very creative, I know. We put a lot of time into the name of that. But keep in mind, these are our opinions, but we both feel fairly confident that our opinion is the correct opinion.
Based on decades and decades of listening to music.
So. Yes. Yeah. So I believe that, you know, we probably have some similar things going on here in that they're both originals and remakes.
That's it. There it is. So we got folks. So we
but
got.
I'm going to start. Okay. So I'm going to start with the original is by The Animals. The remake is by Five Finger Death Punch. And the song is House of the Rising Sun. Now, I have a bit of a clip from both. And I will play them. I have it set up so it will play some of the Animals first. And then it will play Five Finger Death Punch second. And then I will give you my opinion, and then Kenyatta will chime in and tell you what she thought. I'm not, we'll find out. So here goes.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call
And who's the second band?
Five Finger Death Punch. And I'm going to be honest with you, their version of it makes me want to give them a five finger death punch because I absolutely hate it. It sounds like a Macho Man Randy Savage impersonator on the toilet who's constipated singing the song.
Or someone is really freaking tired. Either or. Because he just literally sounds exhausted. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And I remember the original now. Yeah, I agree. The original is better.
Yeah. Yeah. The original clearly won.
Yeah, the second band, the lead singer's voice, he's suited to something else, but not that song.
Yeah. That was and I don't even mind the fact that they changed New Orleans to Las Vegas because, you know, just based on sort of the time that we live in, Vegas is probably more fitting and more people would understand Vegas being the place where that would occur. So that part doesn't even necessarily bother me. It's just the singing is, I just can't.
Because like when he ends up, I'm like, ew. Yeah. Sounds like you're reading a conjuring spell or something. I don't like it.
Yeah. No, that was pretty, pretty painful for me.
Ouch.
Yeah. So now I'm going to move on to the remake is better. And this one is, the original is Shocking Blue, and the remake is Bananarama. And the song is Venus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So here we go. The summon of beauty and love. And Venus was her name. She's got it. Yeah, baby. And this will be the version you're probably way more familiar with.
I've heard them both. It's kind of hard. I mean, the 80s had its own distinct style, so it's hard for me. Bananarama edges it out. It's not as big as a win for me between the two, but it edges out to me.
I'm in the same boat. I think they're both good. Mm-hmm. I prefer the Bananarama version, obviously, mm-hmm. probably because just my generation, and it was played a lot in the 80s. It was a huge hit.
Yeah, it was.
Side note, one of the members of Bananarama is married to Andrew Ridgeley, the forgotten half of Wham.
Oh, my dear. God, I had the biggest crush on that man.
But, yeah, I don't know if it's just, I like the pacing better of, you know, the remake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I actually even like the harmonies of having three people singing it at once.
Yes.
Better.
Yes. Agreed.
But yeah, I wouldn't, you know, unlike say the Five Finger Death Punch song, I wouldn't turn the channel immediately if it came on the radio. I'd listen to it.
I would do a Kill Bill on that guy. I would. Five Finger Death Punch indeed. Good God. All right.
Yeah. I kind of feel like going back to the Five Finger Death after Disturbed remade Sound of Silence. It's almost like some of these other groups. Oh, we got to do that too. I don't know. Maybe this one came out first, but I doubt that none of them had the success that Disturbed had with Sound of Silence. And I almost feel like, oh, we got to find a song from the 60s and
massacre it.
Yeah. But, you know, anyway, yeah.
It didn't go quite the way they thought it would. Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, in terms of the Venus one, One of the things a lot of people from our generation don't even realize is that that was a remake. And to millennials and younger, there was, they probably know that song as the theme song from the Gillette Razor Blades for Women.
Indeed. Indeed. They went ahead and co-opted it, as many of the great songs end up being done, commercialized.
Yeah.
It. Not that it wasn't already commercialized, but you know.
Yeah. But I'm a big fan of the pacing and everything of the remake. So,
yeah. Yep.
So there's that. And then my next one, my next category for me personally, I had it different. I changed it to this. I'm calling it the Did It Justice. I like the original. I'm just going to go ahead and say it beforehand. The original, I love. It's a great song. But the remake, for the time that it came out, I feel is a really good remake. The artist made the song, changed some of the lyrics to make it more the way it would be if they would have written it. And it did come out at the same time that the movie about the lead singer of the original band came out. And the original band is The Doors. The song is L.A. Woman. The remake is Billy Idol. And this was released when the movie came out. He was initially set to have a much bigger sort of side role in the movie The Doors. But about 4 months before filming, Billy Idol was in a horrific motorcycle accident, almost lost his leg. And Oliver Stone, rather than write him out, just wrote him out, and writing him out sort of just changed his line. And there's a part where Morrison goes to a bar and it almost doesn't fit in with the rest of the movie. And Billy Idol's in there and he's just sitting at the bar drinking because he still wasn't able to stand.
He did a, there was a video that he did from a song that had just come out on, you know, his newest album. There's a video that he did where they shot it in a way that he wasn't shown standing up. It had a model in it. You remember the song?
Yeah, they did Cradle of Love.
Cradle
came
of
out
Love.
At the same time.
Yeah, that was the song. And like the whole video is him, the girl's dancing through an apartment, and then Billy
yep.
Idol's on like a screen. So they didn't have to show him actually moving or anything like that. I remember that.
Yeah, full disclosure, when I was downloading all of this stuff the other day, I watched that video like 14 times.
Of course you did, because that song is the bomb still.
That is a great song, and teenage Jack loved that video, and apparently middle-aged Jack also liked that video. So
I just like Billy Idol, so it works either way.
But yeah, L.A. Woman is on, that album is Cradle of Love, and L.A. Woman is on that, so... I will go ahead and start and give everybody a chance to hear the two versions. That was more of like the last album of The Doors was more blues. And if I'm not mistaken, that was the last song Jim Morrison recorded before he died like 3 months later in Paris.
He was something else. Oh boy.
Yeah, but here's Billy.
City of night. City of night. Okay, I remember that one now. I remember hearing that one now. I wasn't a fan of the Doors, so I never really listened to a whole lot of, except for like the obvious songs that always circulated. But
Right.
I remember hearing Idol's version of that song. And you said that was your comparison on those two was what now?
Billy Idol did it justice.
Okay,
I do not hate it at all. I don't mind that he changed it to babe instead of girl. It's Billy Idol. That's how he would sing it.
Yes, and it was the 90s.
Yeah, so that doesn't bother me at all that he did that, but I felt the music, the pacing and everything was really good. It was, modernized just right. Instead of it being like a rock blues, it was more of a rock pop. And I feel that he did the song justice, and I have zero complaints with his version of LA Woman.
Agreed.
Zero.
It was a peppier, a little sped up tempo too. But yeah, I agree. Of course, I'm biased, so of course, Billy, I don't.
My wife has a thing for Billy Idol.
I know she does.
She, yeah. And I do think that Billy Idol, though, has one of the greatest sort of reasons that his stage name came about. And that would be when he was in elementary school, his teacher, when his parents went to a, parent-teacher type of conference thing, his teacher said that young Mr. Billy's mind is idle.
Yeah, that'll do
And
it.
so, of course, he spells it,
Like worship idol.
right. But that's where that came about. And I've always found that to be like a hilarious
It
F
is
you
funny.
to his teacher.
She probably listened to it a year later. She's like, I knew he wasn't no good.
So this next one is my both are awesome. And let's go through that real quick.
This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but it's got no soul. And it's taken you so long to find out you were wrong when you thought it held everything. You used to think that it was so easy. You used to say that it was so easy. But you're trying. One more year and then you'd be happy, but you're crying now.
Okay, that was Jerry Rafferty came out in the 70s. Baker Street's the song. And you'll probably figure out the remake on this one.
Oh, I just figured out the song.
Dance makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but it's got no soul. And it's taken you so long. Found you wrong when you thought it had everything.
It's amazing how different the same notes and chords and all of that junk being played on an electric guitar sound different from being on a sax.
Yeah, like I recognized it right there at the end with the last few bars. I was like, I've heard this freaking song.
Once again, I don't mind. I think they're both awesome. I like the faster pacing of the Foo Fighters better. But I don't mind the other one. If I was in a, when I'm in a chill mood, I listen to the Jerry Rafferty version. The rest of the time, I listen to the Foo Fighters version. But I like them both. I think they're both good. And I can see why Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters wanted to remake that song.
Agreed. Agreed. I mean, Dave
And
Grohl, he's one of my low-key favorites, so.
nothing wrong with that.
Indeed.
A simple, I don't know if I've told this. Kurt Cobain and Pat Smear were walking by in a recording studio and they heard the guitar. They looked in there and Dave Grohl was playing the guitar. And Kurt Cobain turns to Pat Smear and he goes, he's the best guitar player in the band. And he was the drummer. So I've always thought that was a pretty cool compliment. And apparently Dave didn't know that until several years after Kurt died. Pat never told him. But it's pretty cool.
It is. It is.
But yeah, I think they're both awesome. The next category is completely different, and the only thing that is the same is the name of the song and the lyrics. This one is 100%. Until we recorded last Thursday, I had no idea the second version of this even existed. So this is 100% Kenyatta's fault. If you like this, if you don't like it, if you like it, it's also Kenyatta's fault because she's the reason I know about it. I was going to go with a completely different one, but yeah. So this is a little longer, but I had to do it, for my friend. I had to have this just be a little bit longer. The original. I just had to get that full, emotional kick in from Prince.
It doesn't matter what mood I'm in. As soon as I hear Purple Rain, I'm immediately somber. That's not a bad thing, but that's just how
Right.
effective that song has always been.
And this next thing you're that, well, we'll just go.
Yeah.
Never meant to cause you any sorrow. I never meant to cause you any pain. Only wanted one time to see you laughing. I only wanted to see you laughing in the purple rain, purple rain. Purple rain, purple rain.
So yeah, that the lyrics and the name are the same.
I swear, I'm surprised I haven't heard this being played in a Cracker Barrel.
Well,
I've been in there so often enough.
but yeah, I played this for Heather last Friday night after you introduced it to me, and she basically told me to stop, or she was going to give me a five-finger death punch.
She told you go straight to nurse.
It like hurt her at like a visceral level, like. I don't know if she could have listened to the entire song without her DNA unraveling.
That's serious business. Okay.
Yeah. Needless to say, for me, I'm all about the Prince version, and I actually like Dwight Yoakam. There's a lot of Dwight Yoakam songs that I like. This is not one of them. Now that I've listened, to it several times, that is not one of my Dwight Yoakam songs. That is
That is a banjo picking song right there. Ooh, boy.
yeah, that is wildly different. And yeah, those are my thoughts on that version. And my last one is what I'm calling, well, I'm just calling it this. Some people consider the cover to be the greatest cover version of all time. Lots of people have said that. It's been in tons of magazines, lots of polls. I think they are both equally good, but it depends on the viewpoint, and I will play it or give that after I play it. But that would be Hurt, the original version by Nine Inch Nails, and then the Johnny Cash cover.
I had a
And
feeling that was going to be on your list.
well, and I love them both.
Because I mean, I did the same thing you did. I looked like a whole bunch of articles of originals and covers, and I kept seeing that one. And I'm
Yeah.
like, how do I know he's going to put that on his list? Okay.
I mean, sometimes I'm predictable. And for whatever reason, when you have streaming services, I don't actually have CDs or CD player to rip the song off of. So I had to go find it online. And for whatever reason, the Nine Inch Nails version is a little staticier than it normally should be. But I'll go ahead and play it, and then we'll move into the Johnny version.
I wear this crown of shit upon my life's chair, full of broken thoughts I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else. I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend. Everyone I know goes away.
And then here's the Mr. Cash.
I wear this crown of thorns
upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts. I cannot repair beneath the stains of time. The feelings disappear. You are someone else. I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down.
Okay. I love them both, but it's the perspective of the person singing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because Johnny mm-hmm. Cash was a man that was around 80 years old when he sang that. And it's the exactly. regret of a lifetime. He has that older crackle in his voice that tends to affect male singers more than female singers. But you can hear the lifetime of regret sort of as he sings it in there, whereas the Nine Inch Nails version with Trent Reznor is somebody who's, you know, late 20s, early 30s, is dealing with drug addiction and depression and suicidal thoughts.
And consider the fact that Cash also dealt with drug right. addiction and alcoholism.
Right, so for him, he understood what the song meant from mm-hmm. the 28, 30-year-old perspective. Mm-hmm. But he also understood it from looking back. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, it's like the person that's going through all of that stuff in the immediate moment versus the person that survived it and is looking at it at the end of their life mm-hmm. has regret, still may have some of these, you know, type of feelings, probably still deals with depression. That doesn't go away. But obviously the original version is the capping off of the entire album, because the Downward Spiral is a theme album. It is about mm-hmm. somebody with severe depression who the depression side of his brain is telling him to commit suicide. The other half isn't. And so it's almost like this internal fight between him and, you know, the depression side of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's the perspective of, in the viewpoint of the age of the person singing it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. But, that's the first thing I thought of. I'm like, he's here. He's all the way here. But it conceivably could be the same man, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it could be. And it's just the Nine Inch Nails dude lived to be an old guy.
Yeah.
He made it through. He found a way.
He made it through. But every now and then, he remembers.
Yeah. So that took longer than I had planned. So we still got I think, didn't you have a couple for us too?
I did.
Let's move on.
Folks, we're just going to say it here. We don't plan links, as you probably know by now. So if this just turns out to be extra long, just hang in there, because we told you to. Okay, here we go.
It's all about music, folks. It can't be bad.
It can't be bad. So I did mine a bit different, not the same order, but I try to come close to, you know, the themes of it all. So my first song is a little tune called On Broadway, originally done by a group called the Drifters in 1963, and then covered 14 years later, and I'll tell you who after I play them.
All right.
They say the girls are something else on Broadway.
On Broadway.
But looking at them just gives me the blues.
On Broadway.
So that's the original, 1963.
Okay.
The cover, I mean, 14 years later, now we're coming to the 70s, and the 70s is its own unique era.
That it was.
Here's your remake or cover, excuse me. That cover was by the legendary jazz great George Benson. Listening friends, I have to tell you, my house was a musical house. So for my dad, I got George Benson and Al Jarreau and Bob James and Herb Alpert and Hooked on Classics. And for my mother, I got old school Deep South Southern gospel. And then from the both of them, I got The Temptations and the OJs and Parliament and Funkadelic, et cetera, but songs like these, especially this one, stick in my brain. And on Broadway, George Benson's versions is actually one of my favorite songs, period. So I'm not going to take any questions behind
Okay.
that.
I did
Well, what did you
appreciate the
think?
funk. I appreciated the funk sort of, rhythm going on. But kind of like how you felt with Venus, I actually think that the Drifters version just slightly edges it out. I mean, it's close. I'll listen to both. But I just feel that the Drifters version, just like honest, would be a 10, and the other one's like a 9.
Like they're both good products of their time. I
Right.
mean, they're 14 years apart, but what a difference in style and song. And because the Drifters, I think, was a four-piece singing group, and George Benson was
Right.
just George Benson and his guitar. So it's a different vibe for each one of the eras. But I see what you're saying. I mean, like I said, George Benson's one of my favorites anyway, so that edges it out. But the
Yeah.
Drifters, the original one, it's no small deal. It
Yeah,
is
it's
good.
actually kind of similar to the LA Woman with the Doors and Billy Idol, because I think there was like a 19-year difference between the two. And the Billy Idol's great for its time, and it's the same thing. But yeah, I love them both. I think they're both great versions.
So this next song, almost the same, but I'll let you know how I felt at the end. The song is, and I know you know the song, What a Fool Believes. Originally done by the Doobie Brothers, 1979. So, and then I'm gonna play the cover immediately, and you'll have no problem identifying who's singing that. So we'll
Okay.
discuss after.
As she rises to her apology, anybody else would surely know he's watching her go. But what a fool believes he sees the wise man has the power.
So yeah, I don't think you need any clues as
Yeah,
to who did the
I'm gonna go with Aretha.
cover.
You know, it'd be cool though. I think that if the Doobie Brothers and Aretha Franklin perform that together, that would be amazing. And does that exist?
Close. And my opinion on these two, I mean, Aretha always, she's done countless covers. She did countless covers in her career.
Right.
She's always had her own spin on all of them, which is basically like a gospel tinge to it, which is not wrong. It's not bad. But for me, the original version does it better. It's just something about Michael McDonald.
Right.
I don't know. His voice is just unique. And it's funny you mention them singing together because the Doobie Brothers version came out in 1979. Her cover came out a year later in 80.
Right.
And then Aretha and Michael McDonald got together to do a duet cover of a song called Ever Changing Times. The original was sung by a singer by the name of Syeda Garrett. 1987 for the movie Baby Boom with Diane Keaton. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love the song. And Aretha and Michael did the duet cover in 1992, and it sounds very, very good.
I have to imagine.
Yes,
and,
look that
you
up.
Know, while we're on the subject of Aretha Franklin, of course, you remember her song Pink Cadillac.
Sure.
That was remade by Bruce Springsteen, and I don't know what he was smoking when he decided to do that. But while I do not hate it as much as I hate Five Finger Death Punch or even the Dwight Yoakam, not a fan of his version.
Now you have me going to go listen to it like just because. And I'll probably poke my ears out, but we'll see.
Well, I don't know. I don't want this to be, I don't want you to go and listen to it and then it be the end of the podcast.
It's not, I don't have anything against the boss. I don't, but now I'm just curious. It's how I feel about horror movies. I just got to go see. So the next song is one of those ones that's both good for their eras. Sort of similar to On Broadway, sort of similar to Venus. But it was actually, this is the one I was telling you about offline that I heard someone else perform, someone else other than these two artists perform, because this song has been covered quite a bit.
Right.
And then I was like, wait a minute, somebody sang that song before? Oh, and then somebody else sang that song. And somebody else sang that. The song is Try a Little Tenderness, written back in 1932 for the Ray Noble Orchestra. And it had been done a couple times, covered a couple times after that. A better known version came along in 1946 by the one and only Frank Sinatra. Here we go.
And a world that's soft and gentle makes it easier to bear. You won't regret it. Women don't forget it. Love is their whole happiness. And it's all so easy.
So there's his version. And it's Frank Sinatra. What are you going to get?
Odd side note, I have a cousin that's a Frank Sinatra impersonator in Austin, Texas.
Oh, my. Is there any video?
No, but I have a CD somewhere in my house.
Interesting. But I mean, it's Frank Sinatra. He was that guy. That's how he sang stuff. And it's very low key. It's very pleasant. You can see him performing in some quiet, smoky nightclub where literally everybody is smoking and drinking white liquor of some sort. This is that kind of song. But everybody else and their mama knows the more popular version. Here it is.
You won't regret it, no, no. No, girl, they gon' forget it. Love is their home. Happiness, yeah. But it's all so easy. All you gotta do is try. Otis Redding,
of course. Yeah.
1966.
Man had a musical voice and he left us too soon.
Oh, dear God, yes. And the similarities between this and RiRi is that, especially during this era, well, not even this, that era, for like a good solid, oh, I don't know, from the early 50s all the way through till now, a lot of the best singles, singers in R&B started in a church.
Right.
So you almost, you, it's not ever going to be surprising to hear a version of a song by what some of the best R&B singers have a little church tint, whether it's like how they hold a lyric or where, how, whether it's the instruments that's played, like you got the organ going or something like that. You can definitely hear it in this song. There's no question about it. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it actually ties in with one of the artists that I put on there. Apparently, don't quote me on this, but from what I understand, Otis Redding was one of Jim Morrison's, lead singer of The Doors, favorite musicians.
I believe it. I mean, think about the way the two of them sing. Like, that kind of singing is coming like from somewhere in the depths. Right. I believe it. I believe it. But I tried to I tried to pull out the sections of song that covered like the same verses.
Right.
But I couldn't resist adding in this last little bit from near the end to try a little tenderness, because this part is what a lot of our generation was familiar with. Like, if you weren't already familiar with his songs, this is where you got familiar with it, because right, this was the part of the song that came up in a particular movie. That is Ducky trying to woo Molly Ringwald's character in Pretty in Pink as he flings himself all over the record store lip syncing to Otis Redding. So there it is. But everybody, like I said, most people know about Otis Redding's version, as they well should, but Frank Sinatra is Frank Sinatra, and it is a singular right sound. So yeah, there you go. Next song. I put this in a category of eased out, slower tempo, the minimalized version of a song. And I had heard the original song like years ago, forgot it. And then I heard the cover of it last year, and I was like, so I had to include it here. So the song is called Never Let Me Down Again, done originally in 1987 by a new wave group called Depeche Mode. Here it is. I'm taking a ride with my best friends. I hope he never lets me down again. He knows where he's taking me. Taking me. So that's the original version, and that was typical of 80s new wave. I mean, what can you do? But even with the similar sounds, all the 80s new wave and new romantic bands had their own flair on their shit, and Depeche Mode was stood out in the bunch. So that's their version. The cover version I heard, and it took me a while to realize that it was a cover version because it's so different, but it's beautiful, was covered by a singer named Jessica Mazin. And I'll let you listen first, and then I'll go in the backstory.
All right.
Was that not?
Before you go to the backstory, I just want to say I prefer the cover because it seems it's haunting almost. At least that section that I heard. I haven't heard the full song.
Oh yeah, listen to the full song.
That was like haunting, but in an awesome kind of you know, an awesome kind of way. So I prefer that one.
I do too. I do too. So had you heard of this new series that HBO put out last year? Like, they didn't always have new series, based on a video game called The Last of Us.
I have. That's because I am married to somebody that won't quit talking about the lead on that show.
Tell her to listen to this song. I think she'll like it. She'll probably remember it.
Right.
She'll probably remember it. The original version played at the end of episode one. And it's relevant to the plot.
Okay.
Because it relates to a couple of secondary characters. In episode three, we come back to those same secondary characters, and the entire episode is dedicated to them. And their story ends during that episode. And so this mellowed out, slow, somber version plays during the near the end of the episode. And it relates to the same two people. So it's definitely a change in not just mood, but what's actually happening. And it's actually, they're actually talking about, I mean, the song is talking about, you know, the first one's saying best friend, like buddy. The cover to me is singing like a lover.
Right.
So that's actually how it relates. If you watch the show, Heather would know. If you watch the show, you'll see how it relates. But I agree, the cover is like incredible. Like I like stopped in my tracks when I heard it. I was like, hello? What the hell? How dare they?
Damn. But I like
it. I do like it. The singer happens to be the daughter of a producer and television writer named Craig Mazin, who was an executive producer, co-writer, and co-creator of the show.
Mm.
So he pretty much engaged her services to cover this song, and I couldn't be happier for the nepotism. So
yeah, she did a great job. There's a similar song, Nazareth's Love Hurts. Mm-hmm. And it was remade by an artist named Nan Vernon for the Rob Zombie version of Halloween.
God,
the only good thing that came out of that is Nan Vernon's version of Love Hurts.
Thank you. I was going to say.
It is. It's like that, where they're very, very completely different, but it's haunting in the way that she sings it. And that sort of reminds me kind of those two of that particular thing.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So,
yeah, I think I must have blanked out that movie. I watched it once and I'm like, who the hell keeps giving Rob Zombie money to make movies? And why does he keep putting his wife in them? I digress.
Right. That's a podcast all on its own.
The next song is the difference between the original and the cover is that the original is standard fare. The cover, still identifiable, but it has a whole new zhuzh. The song is called Valerie. The original artist, and I didn't know it was a cover until I started researching for this episode. The original was done by a British group called the Zootons in 2006. So we're here, there, and let me know if you agree with my assessment on it being okay.
All right.
Well, sometimes I go out by myself and I look across the water and I think of all the things what you do.
That's the original. And it sounds a lot like a lot of other stuff that was out in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
So if I had heard that song before I heard the cover, I would have been like, But I heard the cover first. So right. I'm going to be forever biased. And the cover was a year later by Amy Winehouse. She sang on a song that was done by producer Mark Ronson. And that's the version I heard first. And it blows my way back to this day. May she rest in peace.
Thank you.
No, yeah, no, you're right. Amy Winehouse's version's better. Not like, even close.
Like anything, she's done at least one other cover that I'm aware of. I probably have to go back and listen to her stuff. She did a cover of a song called Me and Mrs. Jones. And it's Mr. Jones in her case. She killed it because she's another one that was a very unique talent and gone too soon. But yeah, there was no question for me which one was better. Like I said, if you had just heard the original song, you've been like, it sounds a lot like everything else that was going on.
Right.
But then you get to this one, you know, immediately it's Amy Winehouse and you know you're in for a treat, which I believe you are. So
I agree.
My next selection is going to be probably possibly a surprise for you. I'm not sure. But I'm going to let it play both the original, which you're obviously familiar with, and the cover. And I'll let you guess.
Okay. So
the song is Billie Jean. And unless you've been under a rock forever, you'll know the original artist was Michael Jackson. So you'll hear the original and then the cover. Here we go.
People always told me, be careful what you do. Don't go around breaking young girls' hearts. And mother always told me, be careful who you love. Be careful what you do. Because the love becomes the truth. Hey, the Billie Jean's like my love. She just
told me, be careful who you love, careful what you do before the lie becomes the truth. Billie Jean's not my lover, she's just a girl. Says that I am the one, but the kid is not my son.
Did that not just blow your socks off?
Yeah, that would be the very awesome version by Chris Cornell. There's a reason his nickname was the Banshee.
That brought goosebumps on my arms, no lie.
Yeah, he also, have you ever heard his version of Nothing Compares to You?
That and his version of Purple Rain, yes.
Yeah.
He was a ridiculous talent gone too soon, my God.
Yeah, yeah. Whew. That one, that would be the both are awesome category.
Yes. Completely different. Both are awesome because they're done by two very amazing singers. Both gone too soon. Hell.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for sure.
Yeah.
Somewhere there is a parallel universe where both Michael and Chris are still alive and they sang that together.
Probably so. And then they all got together because Prince and MJ get along now and they all sing Purple Rain.
Yes.
I'm crying inside.
Yeah. Yeah, that would... That sounds like a good earth to live on.
Yeah. Yeah. Because right now, the earth is asking.
This one is... But yeah. Yeah. Now the Chris Cornell version is just really cool and it's so different, but you know, you could it's hard to say. Obviously, we've talked about Michael Jackson's version when we did the Michael Jackson special, so
yeah, I was reading comments there on YouTube, and I'm always interested in random people's comments on things. Someone said that, you know, people try to give him grief. The way he rearranged it and like stripped the song down to like, it's because it's nothing but his guitar, it's acoustic.
Right.
He stripped it all the way down. And the point he made was, this is not a happy song. It might have been peppy with the beat and all that in the video when MJ did it. But when you listen to the lyrics, he's literally talking about a stalker.
Right.
a poor woman who is possibly mentally deranged, stalking him, claiming that he is her baby daddy. This is not a nice song.
Yeah.
So, there you
and
go.
And him making it kind of more visual, you know, like down at the yes. core. That,
yes.
That brings out that side of the song that people kind of miss.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the 80s did a number on us Gen Xers. Because we really thought we were having a good time. And we're actually dancing to some very fucked up psychopathic songs.
Right?
Every breath you take?
I know. White Wedding. You know that?
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, well, that sounds like an episode we need to do. Songs from the 80s that people play at weddings that aren't wedding songs.
Oh, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that immediately next month. We got a free week next month, so we'll put it in there.
I just want to throw this in here real quick since we are talking about originals and remakes. I don't have any music for it, but everybody's going to be familiar with the Heart song, Alone.
Yes.
Alone. Most people don't realize that is a remake. It has actually been remade like 4 or 5 times. Theirs just happens to be the most popular, well-known. I want to say it was top 5, you know, on the charts at the time. The only reason I'm saying this, one of the versions that was done beforehand, this is the reason I'm pointing it out. It was a duet. I do not know the name of the lady artist, but I do know who the male artist was. And this was done in like 1981 or two. Uncle Jesse.
I'm looking at it now.
It's Uncle Jesse.
I remember that show. I remember that show. It was Valerie Stevenson. That was the woman singer.
Their take on it is
horrible.
Completely not the take that Hart had on it.
Do we want to just dig it up since we're
if you can find it and get it up going real quick, you can. No need to play the Heart version. I'm pretty sure most people are familiar with that, but
I'm listening to it in my head right now. So what does it matter? But yeah, I had no idea that that happened. Holy shit.
But it's been done several times. It's just Heart has the definitive version that everyone knows.
Oh yeah. Okay, here we go. Jeez, I'm crow. Here we go.
I hear the ticking of the clock. I'm lying here, the room's pitch dark. I wonder where you are tonight. No answer on your telephone. And the night goes by so very slow.
Oh, hell no. What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know that existed. I remember this show. I remember this show. It didn't stay on long. But oh wow. No.
And with that, folks, if you don't want us to ever play that version of the song again, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/hyperfocuspods. Give us $5 or $10, and we swear to God, we will never play that version of Alone again.
We're gonna, if you don't, start setting up a reoccurring subscription. We are going to do our version of a Rickroll and just throw this song in the middle of episodes at random. You just never see it coming. So you either give us the money or you quit us, but don't quit us because we love you. Okay.
And with that, we hope you enjoyed our little journey down the road of originals and remakes. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.